and welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz. I got that.
You sounded genuinely surprised. You were Scotty Hertz.
Surprised and winded. Like, oh yeah, that's who I am. That's right. I'm still grooving to Oscar Peterson there, who was on before the show before ours.
That's right.
Yeah.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel or subscribe through iTunes. Today, we will be looking at the Ontario government's Hail Mary to lower hydro rates at 25%. Something tells us that Kathleen Wynne's been seeing some of the poll numbers that say that the Liberals could be heading for a big loss in next spring's election. And then, in advance of this weekend's Crackdowns and Creativity Symposium being hosted by OPERG, we'll talk to Akio Maroon, who's self-described as a dedicated single mother, an educator, and an international human rights advocate. We'll talk to Akio about successfully organizing and protesting in 2017 and what lessons we might learn from the example of Black Lives Matter Toronto and other groups that she has been involved in. And then finally, we will look into the rise of hate crimes from Kansas City on a restaurant there to the campus at Concordia. There's been a swell of racist and anti-Semitic sentiment lately. But can that blame be put on all one person, and how might we be able to confront it? But first of all, and speaking of that one person, Donald Trump did something unusual this week. Look presidential. Of course, that's all been somewhat undone in the last 24 hours with new revelations about Attorney General Jeff Sessions having been in contact with the Russian ambassador while he was campaigning for Donald Trump. He was, of course, one of Donald Trump's earliest, if not the earliest, I guess you would call it mainstream Republican politician supporter of Donald Trump. And this is just in over the last hour, but Jeff Sessions said in a press conference, a rather hastily arranged press conference, it was announced about half hour before it got started, that he will indeed recuse himself from any and all investigations into whether or not there was collusion between the Trump campaign and Mother Russia during the presidential election campaign.
Most of this entire government are going to have to recuse themselves from everything at some point, by the sounds of it. Yeah, and that's an evolving story. I wasn't able to catch him because it was working. But you just know it is the kind of thing, I've said this before, that we got something every day. Every day, almost every hour. It's like, what's new in Trump? But yes, you're right. But the joint session speech was interesting in that he didn't really deviate from the program. We saw some regular Trumpisms repeating themselves, like very, 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 and big, and he didn't use any bing, like bing, we're going to do this, bing, we're going to do that. And of course, prior to that, it was announced that he wanted a 10% increase in the military budget. $54 billion additional dollars. I don't know what the Canadian military budget is, but that might be the whole shot for us. $54 billion. Shouldn't really throw numbers out there. I don't know what they are, but so a 10% increase. That's right, folks. I did the math in my head when they said that. I was like, that means they spend $500 billion on their military. Still not enough in their view, I guess. And he had said it's to, quote, win wars, but which America hasn't done since 1945 outright. I guess they could argue they won the Cold War, but considering how much Russian engagement is going on, did they really win the Cold War? I don't know.
Canadian Armed Forces budget, by the way?
Yes.
$18.6 billion.
Oh, my gosh. So it's not even a drop of that bonus bucket that's going to be coming down the pipe.
Yep.
So, as I said, you stick to the trip. Stick to the script. Let me try that again.
We should try sticking to the script.
Talk, it's tongue twister day on Open Sources. Trump, stick to the script. Say that 10 times fast. So, and there's no way he wrote it, right?
No,
I was told
not.
It's like the hand of Bannon, right? Is that?
Well, not only did he not write it, he definitely read it beforehand. And this was pointed out by a couple of people after the speech, that he didn't do the usual things when he's reading the speech off the teleprompter, where he gets to the end of a sentence and he goes, "So true." So true.
Because he's validating what he just said.
Yeah, but I mean, that's where that's the suspicious part. It's like, was that the first time you read that? That it's like,
yeah.
America doesn't win wars anymore. So true. And
people told me.
And of course, he was caught in the limo before heading out to the Hill that he was looking over the speech. So he was prepared.
Well, he's looking at something, right? We don't know.
Well, yes. Presumably, he was looking at a speech and was preparing. It just, the back padding and the self of like just watching the afterword on CNN, they're like, well, that was pretty presidential. Van Jones, I like Van Jones most days, but when he gets on there, it's like, this is the pivot we've all been. This is Trump looking presidential. Now he's presidential. It's just like, what show have you been watching the last 2 years?
He woke up and he was presidential.
He's presidential once every 6 weeks. If that, and
argue he's presidential because he's the president, but
well,
I know
suppose.
What you mean.
Though.
Are you going to behave like
but,
a president?
But, I mean, looking like one, looking
yes.
presidential. And
different
to
world.
His credit, he wore a suit that fits. This is one of the more boggling things about Trump
and
a
different tie. Wasn't
he's the
red,
only yeah. He wasn't wearing the
red
floor
special,
length
yeah.
red tie.
Yes, not that we judge people by their clothes.
The only
but.
The only rich guy I know who doesn't tailor his suits. He just buys them right off the rack.
Maybe they're Trump suits. Like, you know, the Trump line of clothes is possible.
They're all fitted to Trump. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he was looking a bit better. He spoke to the prompter. It looked like he had read the speech beforehand. Bravo. But it was the same Trump stuff. He just said it in his inside voice. And that was, like, the thing that made me just bash my head in with all these TV pundits. It's like, you're looking at the presentation. Why don't we look at the substance? And it's the same Trump stuff. And nothing was more galling than when he announced this voice thing, the Victims of Immigration Crime Engagement, which is straight out of the Final Solution playbook. There was a newspaper that the Nazis sent around every week, starting in 1943, that listed the Jewish crimes, all the crimes in throughout the Reich that Jewish people were responsible
voice, was it?
For. It wasn't called The Voice. It was called Jewish crime or something really simplistic like that, but in German, of course.
Yeah.
But first of all, it doesn't delineate illegal immigrants. It just immigrants.
It just says immigrants.
Second of all,
so you'd be there 50 years.
Second of all, it completely ignores the fact that not only is crime perpetrated by immigrants going down, but not only is there less crime committed by immigrants than American-born people, but the number of crimes being committed by American-born people is going up, while the number of crimes being committed by immigrants is going down, all the while the overall violent crime rate is going down, and that's just one inconsistency in the speech.
Because I did see one breakdown of it where they said he's sort of right on this, and that's the thing, he's mostly sort of right, and lots of times outright wrong, saying statistically it would take, like the amount of Americans who are out of work included young
right.
people and seniors, not just
I did a breakdown.
Unemployed working age.
I did a breakdown.
Let's hear it.
He said 94 million people are unemployed.
Yeah.
But that
of
includes
those, yeah.
44 million people who are retired, 15.4 million people who are on disability, 15.5 million people who are in college, and 12.9 million people who have taken themselves out of the system because they're caretakers. They're like stay-at-home moms, or they're taking care of elderly parents. So they've taken themselves out of the system
for
that reason.
Those lazy people that are taking care of them and retired and on disability. And
right. The real number, I mean, what he's trying to get at, of course, is that there are a lot of people who aren't represented in the monthly unemployment number. And in that point, he is right. There is about 7 million people who are not looking for work, who would probably like to work, but for whatever reason can't get a job. Probably because they're not trained for the jobs that are available, which mm-hmm. isn't a genuine problem. But that's too nuanced to put it in the Trump way, so he just says 94 million people are unemployed.
Pick a number between 1 and 94 million. I don't know. It was, yeah, and of course, the positive notes in the speech that he's talking about bringing the dying industries back. It's going to come roaring back.
Which isn't going to happen.
Which isn't going to happen, probably. More care for the veterans, infrastructure. Things
which
that
would
on
be
the,
nice.
Yes, things on the surface. You say, wow, he wants to invest in infrastructure. But you know, at least in my view, anything that Trump says, you know that over here, if somebody's getting something, that means somebody else is getting stepped on the neck over somewhere else. You know what I mean? It's like somebody else is going to get it, whether it's Mexico, whoever they choose. Although it sounds like he spoke about Canada in glowing terms and name dropped. Trudeau got name dropped. First it was Rosie O'Donnell gets name dropped, and now Justin gets name dropped and specifically mentioned that initiative about the women entrepreneurs. But I think that may have been more of a shout out for Ivanka rather than Justin himself.
Yeah, I'm sure
they're all making doe eyes at Justin. Either way.
I think, there was maybe a lot of fist bumping about the positive Trudeau mention.
And all the stocks went up, right?
But that's been a trend anyway.
They didn't say stocks went up because of Trump's speech. It was like, geez.
Well, CNN was pushing that agenda pretty hard.
Cracked the 21,000, right?
But really?
The fake news were pushing that? Yeah, I don't know.
Well, okay. This is what's weird. This was one of the weird things that Tuesday at lunchtime, he had like a meeting with like key network anchors, including people from CNN, and it was on background. And so CNN was releasing all this stuff like, we have a reliable source, senior source in the administration, which was Trump himself. So here is Trump being an anonymous source 3 days after calling out outlets like CNN and NBC News for being enemies of the people for using anonymous sources that he says were made up. Here's Trump being an anonymous source. That's all problematic. Before we run out of time, I want to draw attention to the matter of Ryan Owens, who was the Navy SEAL who was killed in the Yemen raid.
Yes.
And the apotheosis of his widow. Mm-hmm.
Those pictures of her. I didn't know too much about the story. I just saw this picture of her looking angelic, the kind of photo that they love for the sort of, let's call it the propaganda machine, because that's what it is.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
But has been some blowback on that or just.
Well, I mean, there's analysis. A lot of people who are like saying, like, you can't say bad things about the widow of a soldier and like how she's a political problem. There was a woman on CNN, Mary Catherine Hamm, who was like, you know what, can we like keep politics out of this? Like, you know, she's a widow. She lost her husband. And, you know, can we leave her alone and leave her out of politics? And it's like, well, at least from my point of view, we can have two things in our head at the same time. One of which is, yes, she has every right to be proud of her husband. He has every right to be honored, even especially in a presidential speech. It's nice that she had that moment of recognition and something, you know, her kids can look at in the future. Great. Wonderful. I have no problem with that whatsoever. But she can still be used as a political prop. And the most problematic thing about it is this was earlier that day. He was on Fox and Friends and said that it was the general's fault that that Owens was dead. On top of the fact, he comes out during the speech and said this was a tremendous success. He was told by General Mattis, actually Secretary of Defense Mattis. He's not technically a general anymore. That's another Trump distinction we're probably not going to hear. He's always going to call him General Mattis. But apparently Mattis told Trump that, according to Trump, that the mission was a tremendous success. Nobody has said out loud that this mission was a success because the two objectives of the mission, which were to get intelligence and to kill the number three man in Al-Qaeda, both failed. No usable intelligence at all was gathered. And the one piece of intelligence that did release, a video, is 10 years old. And the guy got away. Not only did he get away, he mocked Trump for letting him get away. And on top of all that, there's the fact it was hastily arranged. He wasn't, apparently it was kind of an afterthought. Once he authorized the mission, he wasn't in the Situation Room when it happened, which is like where the president would be in the midst of an important operation like that. So it's just like all these things kind of tangled up in one package, and then it comes down to this image, and that's kind of going to be the enduring thing on all this, is that image of a war widow, basically.
And that's it, because if you get your propaganda moment, that's what people see. They don't know the backstory, like you said. So, you know, you've got Ivanka gently touching her as she weeps, and I think the parents were there as well.
It's Ivanka, like, showing some shoulder, by the way.
Yes, that's I guess that's true.
Maybe
inappropriately. I don't know. We want modest dress.
Yeah,
that's the State of the Union note. I mean, you know,
I find that stuff bizarre.
It doesn't matter what clothes you wear, but that's where the analysis goes. It generally heads for the toilet, right? So we try to keep it above ground and out of the plumbing.
Yeah, I did find that portion kind of disturbing, and I found the voice portion disturbing.
Portions of this propaganda moment will be disturbing, but yeah. Oh, yes, they will.
And I also found, like, them standing up, giving him a standing ovation every other sentence. That was annoying.
Yeah. The new normal. So we'll see more of this.
And right there was now. A great piece that somebody wrote that, that, you know, this speech kind of was the Republicans giving up on conservatism because there was really nothing conservative about anything he proposed, whether it was spending $1 trillion on infrastructure, which they got up and applauded, even though they ranted and raved about Obama having a similar ideas and, you know, spending more on the military while cutting more for the State Department, which even his own beloved General Mattis, now Secretary of Defense Mattis, said, you know what, you cut the State Department budget, you have to increase my bullet budget, which is, I guess Trump took that as, well, that's the plan then, and I guess that's where we're going.
You're listening to Open Sources. We will be back in a moment.
Hi. My name's Karen, and you're tuned into Guelph's volunteer-programmed campus and community radio station, CFRU 93.3 FM.
And we're back.
Okay.
How's that for a short intermission? There you go.
We just got shortly. So riled up.
That's it.
All right. Next item up for bids.
A new car. No, sir.
That'd be nice. If you've been following Ontario politics lately, it sort of has all come down to electricity bills and how they're going up, up, up. This has obviously hurt politically the Ontario Liberals who are currently in power. So Kathleen Wynne today comes out and says, good news, everyone. We're going to cut your bill by 25%, which is actually 17% because it includes the 8% taking the HST off.
A little bit of sleight of hand on the numbers there, right?
Yeah. And so we're going to be actually paying it's basically how it's been described as it's basically refinancing the mortgage. So in exchange for a longer mortgage term, you're going to get lower rates. So
the children pay.
Well, I know that's...
Which is what they told us when we were children 20 years ago, and now, yeah.
I mean, it's not that it's not fair, but I mean, it was Sophie's Choice time. Do you want lower rates, or do you want to, you know...
Everybody goes, yes, and then we're still not going to vote for you.
And then, well...
If the polls are anything to go by.
Right.
The polls are out, and they all seem to be done by, or sanctioned by Post Media. I don't know. But
that's true, though. That did seem funny.
The word that's getting bandied about is supermajority. So if there was an election held tomorrow, there'd be a supermajority. It's not that super. There's one poll said that the PCs would get 44% of the vote, which is pretty good. I mean, that's, you know, you can win the government with 36%, so 44. Is that super? No, to me, a supermajority is that they get 70%. Or they get, remember that election years ago in New Brunswick where whoever it was, Liberals, won every seat?
Yeah.
That, to me, is like a supermajority, not, well, you know.
Well, the supermajority term was completely made up by the Toronto Sun because they hate Kathleen Wynne and anything Liberal. see their two covers that said "Welcome to Hell."
Oh, beautiful stuff! Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they seem to think that this 44% was going to translate into 84 out of 122 seats for the PCs, and then 27 for the NDP, which would be more than twice the number of seats the NDP have right now, and then would knock the Liberals all the way down to 11, basically just holding on to the stronghold that is the 416.
And interestingly, in the same poll, the part you didn't hear probably was that 28% of the people polled said none of the, and this was the majority of that answering that question, none of the three people, the potential premiers, would be the best choice. So yeah. It's like there's no resounding, like, we want Patrick Brown or we want
Andrew Horvath.
Oh, I don't know why I almost said June Hoffland. I don't know why. I don't know why. It's not even written here. So you take your pick. Pick your politician. Phil Ault. You won't be premier either. Probably not. So
never say never.
Some of the factors, of course, the biggest factor is the high cost of hydro. Right. So, of course, obviously this is coming out now. And the NDP have put their plan out as well. So, I mean, as I've said on social media, whatever, the electioneering begins in earnest. Once you have a fixed election date, you're going to start getting this kind of stuff. So
yeah.
NDP came out with their plan. What was it? Pay less, get more. And then 2 days later, the Wynne Liberals are, we're going to cut the rate. So, and also, 5% of the people polled said one of the reasons they don't particularly like the Wynne Liberals is the sex ed curriculum.
How many? 5%?
5%, which doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, if translated into larger numbers, I don't know that.
Well, bad. I mean, they make a lot of noise about it.
Yeah.
But I mean, who knows by this time next year? I haven't heard anyone protest the sex ed curriculum since, like,
yeah,
well,
but wasn't there a whole
ago?
Party? Wasn't there somebody in that by-election running? It was like, fight the sex ed curriculum party or something? In the by-election where the...
Maybe?
Oh, even Oosterhoff, the...
Well, I thought Oosterhoff was the fight sex ed curriculum.
Well,
candidate.
He is, but then there was somebody in that election was all they did was get up and say, "Hey, fight the sex ed."
Interesting
curriculum.
Side note: it looks like Sam Oosterhoff's going to have to fight to keep his position as the conservative nominee.
Ooh, tell us more. What happened?
I can't remember the name of the guy who's running against him, but apparently he's.
Going, oh, in the next election, you mean?
Yeah, to hold on. Because apparently he's going to challenge him for the nomination for the next election.
Yeah.
And Sam Oosterhoff's brother was fundraising for him off one of the crowdfunding sites, Kickstarter or GoFundMe.
His brother was funding for Oosterhoff, you mean? Or
yeah.
For the other guy? Oh.
No, for Oosterhoff.
I was going to say traitor. But...
Doing fundraising, which is a violation of election rules.
Oops.
But,
it's going to be a one-note wonder. One-term wonder.
Well, I do wonder that. Anyway,
about the one-term wonder.
That poll number about how nobody finds either three option acceptable, I do find interesting. It does seem to suggest that this may be pure. It's either going to be like a spite election where everyone's going to vote PC or NDP, just, you know, to have the liberals gone. I mean, and it has been 15 years, and turnover is healthy, especially after a decade and a half. So just floating that out there. Or it's going to be a low turnout because nobody's going to see anybody they can get behind. I mean, this is all predicated on what happens with Brown, because the last two election victories, those haven't been about, actually, the last three election victories for the liberals, that haven't been about the
liberal love. No.
Liberal love. That's been about the PC leader effing up.
That's it.
So the onus is on Patrick Brown to not F up.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, he hasn't. I would argue he's run a very kind of solid, like, invisible man campaign where he's, like, there. And
he
then
just pops up to
You
go
see
to
him
Pride.
In the corner of your eye and you turn and he's gone. And I don't mean that. I don't say that disparagingly.
No,
I mean,
it's true, though.
Because he's done a fairly good job of staying on side. And he's shrewder than I think people want to give him credit for, because the liberals have this similar motion out about, you know, barring anti-Islamophobia.
Yep.
And Brown said, yep, we're going to vote for it. So he doesn't even fall into the federal conservatives trap. He comes out and says, yeah, we're behind you on that. So it's going to sail through. And so the liberals, it looks like the liberals are going to have a tough time, like, pinning the SoCon stuff to
did
him.
Did they lock Sam Oosterhoff in a cupboard for that vote or something? Probably.
Maybe.
Anyway, also derivative of polls. There was one late last year and, of course, a more recent one that has Kathleen Wynne herself at 14 and 13 percent respectively in terms of popularity. So is there a possibility that they install somebody else in the premier's chair before the election? Maybe, if it's that low. That's lower than Bob Rae was back in the day. Bob Rae at his lowest hit 15%. So we're swirling around there somewhere down. And there was another poll. We're just going to strictly talk about polls. Main Street poll, which is actually Postmedia. We did a bit of analysis of the Toronto area, and they said that the Liberals are in the lead, but they're going to lose seats because Liberal support is concentrated in the downtown of Toronto. And then, of course, think about the outskirts, Etobicoke, which is Fordlandia, Scarborough, and they're saying in those areas, that's where the Liberals stand to lose. So, of course, it's pretty much in this province, if you don't get a solid showing in the GTA, you probably don't win the big chair. So if that poll's anything to go by, you know, polls are grain of salt thing, but of course we still love talking about them anyway. And also a little bit of a subset of that poll was talking about the popularity of John Tory, who is very popular and is also a Tory. John Tory the Tory. It's all tongue twisters today. John Tory is a Tory. He's not a red Tory, but he's not really a Kelly Leach type either. I don't know. I guess you'd call him a center forward. I don't know.
Center
forward. We'll give him a soccer position. Playing in at center forward, John Tory from, I don't know where he's from in Toronto.
Well, I
probably
mean,
Etobicoke.
This is John Tory who's sort of holding on to popularity by not swinging too hard either way.
No. Straight down the middle.
Although he does, I mean, when he comes out and says that, talking about building the Scarborough one-stop subway, and he does open himself up to a line of attack. But, I mean, that's part of a whole tangled web of issues so far as the Toronto Transit is concerned. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be... It's really tough to say because it seems like there's like really no interest in anything. It's the only thing everybody has in common.
Election 2018. There's no interest in anything.
There's no interest.
Just
here.
Make my hydro rate low.
Yeah.
And
but I mean, everyone's kind of subsisting on Kathleen Wynne-hate. No matter the issue, people, whatever issue it is, people know that they don't agree with what Kathleen Wynne has to say about it, even though they do deep down might agree with what she has to say about it. So this is going to be a very difficult election in terms of spurring activism and interest, I think, unless something really tremendously changes in the next year, unless the, like, we got a budget coming up soon for the Ontario, which is going to be the supposedly balanced budget after however many years. So I mean, if that is delivered and maybe there's more good news stories for the Liberals, it may start to affect that that negative rating for Kathleen Wynne. I'm not 100% sure about that though, because I think it's a matter of personality.
Yeah, and something else that should be mentioned, too, just before we wrap it up, is the proposed labor legislation that came out.
Mm-hmm.
I took a look at that, and I thought, this is almost to the left of the NDP. And a lot of the business community has chimed in, and they seem to be up in arms. And, of course, labor are loving it. So I think that the Liberals have just within 72 hours are trying to sort of tease out who they can get on the side.
Yeah.
Within a almost record time, it's okay, we're going to do labor legislation. We're going to settle. There was that settlement with the teachers. We're going to reduce your hydro bill. We're going to do all those things that we do. And then you elect us. And then we, you know, we trash the place.
No, well, I mean, that's, like,
I mean, spend a billion on
that's
power
out of the Trudeau playbook,
work.
Too, though.
Yeah,
that,
for sure.
That, you know, go to the left, deke to the left of the NDP and then rule from the center. And
I, in fact, did spend $30 billion or whatever.
But yeah, you're right. And I'm not sure. I was going to say, I'm not sure people are that stupid, but you never know.
Yeah, that's probably not the best way to put it, but we just sort of accept that it's like we have the Liberals for 15 years or 17 or however many the heck. I think it's been this whole century. And that's like, okay, we're tired of them. And then it's the Conservatives.
Well, we'll see.
Possibly the NDP, but I don't know.
Well, that's another possibility I did write down that, you know,
dark
could
horse
this
candidate.
Be the...
A green or two, maybe.
Because remember what happened in 1990.
I certainly do.
Ask your parents about it, kids.
Yes. That's the election I was in. I think some people know that. But
You know, what happened in 1990 was people were just fed up with the Liberals and the Conservatives, just went NDP not, as a protest vote, not expecting that the NDP was going to actually have a majority government and be able to be in office for 5 years. Mm-hmm. It could happen.
It definitely could. I think if there's enough splits, so depending on the caliber of the candidates, and I think that they're shaking loose, as you mentioned about the battle down south there, whatever, for the Conservatives. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens in Guelph. I think we already know who probably two of the candidates will be, but whoever they are, we will have them on.
For sure.
Try to. Hopefully they'll come.
I can't imagine why they wouldn't come.
Well,
it's safe.
We have a pretty good record of getting people in, so it's safe. And
it's safe and it's sexy. I don't know. Anyway.
Open Sources, your sexy political show.
Anyway, we are going to take a break here and play some music, and then we're going to come right back with our guest of the week, Akio Maroon, who is a activist and rebel rouser and all around good egg. And we're going to have Akio on. We're going to talk about protesting and in the age of Trump and other good things. So come on back after the break. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
CFRU Archive.
And that was a band called Sinister Trailer Park Magic. That CD is actually from 06, almost vintage. Anyway, they're playing the Game Music Festival this weekend. It's playing all weekend. I think some of the shows have started already. If you want more info on that, visit www.gamemusic.ca. It looks like shows all weekend. Never a shortage of shows in this town, so check them out.
Very true. We are a very music-centric town. We are also an activist-centric town, I think. That's a fair assessment of Guelph.
Oh, absolutely.
And our next guest certainly knows activism. Akio Maroon is a dedicated single mother educator and international human rights advocate with over 11 years in occupational health and safety and 14 years in human rights advocacy. Akio currently sits on Ontario's Permanent Roundtable on Violence Against Women, is an executive board member at Pride Toronto and Maggie's Toronto Sex Workers Action Project, the founding director of the Toronto Childcare Collective, and the founding director of Grind Toronto, Toronto's only sex-positive movement for Black, Indigenous, and people of color that celebrates safer sex and promotes consent culture. So a very very busy person here, and we are certainly glad Akio could take time to talk to us. Akio, welcome to Open Sources.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Well, we are glad to have you. You were, of course, coming up to Guelph this weekend for creativity, or is it Crackdowns and Creativity? That's right. So, first of all, you may not be aware of this, but Scotty and I are both white, straight males. So,
no.
Surprise, eh?
we sometimes get into the business. But I think one of the things I wanted to start off asking you was, what can we do for you? Because you are coming at it from being a Black person, from identifying as queer. And, you know, obviously, I think it's safe to say we're part of the problem. Not us specifically, but our...
Oh, probably us. No.
So, from your perspective, being white, straight, male, what can we do to either get out of your way or help the cause?
I think one of the very important things that you mentioned is, like, you know, what can you do to help me? Mm-hmm. Actually, you can't really do anything to help me. I mean,
fair
you can
enough.
Always donate, and I will never say no. But what we have to understand is activism and the role of human rights works in Canada as a democratic nation is dependent upon everyone.
Right.
And so it's not necessarily what you can do for me. It's what you can do for your country. It's what you can do for your fellow man.
Mm-hmm.
It's what you can do for yourself to make sure that you are you can, you know, die easy and say, hey, you know what? I've done this work. I know that I was here for X amount of years on this planet, and I made sure at every single opportunity that I had, I leveraged whatever privilege I had to ensure that marginalized folks are being heard, marginalized folks are being supported, marginalized folks are getting the rights and do justice that they deserve, much like you have or
mm-hmm.
you would be accustomed to as a white cisgendered male.
Right. Well, let's talk a bit about what can be done then, because I think there's a feeling right now of, and coming by and large south of the border, a feeling of powerlessness. There's certain people in power in the United States right now who don't seem very warm to the cause. So, you know, we have seen a tremendous increase in terms of activism south of the border and here in Canada as well. So in terms of the landscape right now and the environment for activism, what are you seeing as a member of that activist community?
Well, I definitely see that more people who I would call them the moderate left are definitely taking notes and saying, hey, you know, I'm just a regular person who does X, Y, Z. How can I be of help? I think, if anything, I'm seeing more folks who wouldn't have otherwise done much of anything
mm-hmm.
saying and becoming a part of the conversation and listening and saying, hey, you know what, I am part of the problem. And yes, it's definitely, and let's be real, like, nothing has really changed in the fact that, you know, there's still our prison system is still overpopulated by indigenous people and mm-hmm. black people and people of color more so than any other race. We are definitely hearing more, I think, is what's going on. But mm-hmm. this has been the reality of folks like myself who have been, I'm an immigrant. I'm, you know, a black woman. I've seen this. I've heard this from family, from friends. I think it's now, you know, with social media, it's now becoming more heard mm-hmm. by people who would have otherwise not been interested in it. And we've also seen a change in strategies and how activism, you know, has is taking place. Like, you know, we're seeing more grassroots radical folks who are willing to shut down a highway, mm-hmm. block a street, block Pride, do whatever it takes to say, hey, we've done everything else to get you to stop and notice and do something, and you've been unwilling. So here we are. We're taking it to you. We're making it so that we're agitating the status quo and so that people will listen.
There's also the flip side of it, too, though, that, you know, social media has opened up tremendous opportunities for people to be more hateful and more spiteful and indeed intimidate people who might otherwise get out and organize.
I don't think it's been an increase of it. I think what mm-hmm. it is that people just feel more empowered mm-hmm. because there is a divide. You know, they're on the internet, and so they feel like they can never be tracked down. They feel like there can be no consequence. I don't think that people have become more hateful. Mm. I think people are more brazen. I feel that people feel more empowered to let their hate flag fly. But I don't think that hate is something that see one person do it, and so all of a sudden you just, you know, it catches on like a cold. Let's be real, like, people have biases, people have hate within them, mm-hmm. and it's just the ways and the medium in which they have taken to make that hate show. So I think it's always been there within people. I think people always have their biases. And so I think that now people with, you know, the changes in the U.S. and the changes within Canada, too, because let's be real, we are not the country we advertise that we are. Mm-hmm. And I think that the more you look into what our policies are, you see that Canada has its own problems. And I will be talking this weekend a bit about Canada as a whole and what we look like and what, you know, America looks like. But I try to stay away from comparing us mm-hmm. Because we have our own homegrown terror, and it doesn't look like what you think when you hear the word terror.
Right.
You know, most of the occurrences that have happened in Canada are from people like you, white, cisgendered men.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that is something we've discussed on the show quite a bit, making the point that it's like, you know, most, if not all, those occurrences we've seen lately have been that. Just to change it up a little bit, on the show, we examine the political machine every week at all levels, from municipal on up. And part of your extensive bio said that you sit on Ontario's permanent roundtable on violence against women,
yeah.
which I'm probably a lot of our listeners hadn't heard about. So can you tell us a bit about that? And I know, like, in terms of how do you see that? And it's obviously an activist thing to be on that panel, but then again, it's your sort of right, I would say, within the machine as well. How long have you been on that panel, and how do you find it? Is it a productive experience, or is it, like all sort of panels and bureaucratic things, somewhat frustrating? Or is it different from that altogether? Is it a different world? So I don't know. Trying to feel it out, because I was like, that sounds interesting, but we never, you know. Anyway.
Well, it's not a panel. It's a roundtable. So what it is, it's an appointed position to sit on the roundtable. And what it is we discuss emerging gender-based violence issues. And we assist the government in implementing different actions. So one of them is the action plan on violence against women. And so it's, I don't know if you've heard of it, it's called It's Never Okay.
Yes.
There's been some ads that have been run, and there's definitely some social media push on it. And, you know, it talks about the fact that, you know, what is central to this is one in three women will experience some form of sexual assault in her lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, women represent 73% of victims of domestic violence. That's huge. And I think that it's one of these things that is hugely underreported. And we have gone about creating legislation and changing legislation, changing laws that are impeding justice, that are impeding women from coming forward, that are impeding the survivability of someone who has or will experience violence. And so it's a great honor to sit on the round table. The co-chairs are Farah Khan and Sai Kassi. And I think that...
From Guelph, yeah. Sai's from Guelph, right?
Yes.
Yes,
of
course.
And if anything, it's the... it's just an opportunity to move forward this conversation on gender-based violence and move it out of the shadows and move it out into the light and then create laws that that are not oppressive, create
right.
laws and change laws that encourage justice, that encourage women to come forward, and that encourage folks to not be violent.
And I think that, you know, violence against women, this is, unfortunately, it seems to be a topic that has no bottom because we've had this RSCMP report now that talks about how a relatively small percentage of cases brought to Ontario police forces and the municipal police forces aren't being prosecuted. Or are being the small percentage is being prosecuted. The mass majority isn't being prosecuted at all, or not even making it into a police report, for that matter. And now we have municipal police forces scrambling to address this.
It's very, very hard, and it's a very hard topic, and it's very prevalent in every single environment, every single workplace.
Mm-hmm.
The RCMP themselves have
colorful culture.
Yeah, their whole culture needs to change. And if you're talking about, you know, these are the people who are in charge with investigating this, and their own home mm-hmm. is anything from idea. If not far from it, I think that it definitely speaks volumes about where we are as a country when we talk about violence against women, when we talk about even same-sex partner violence. I think is, you know, intimate partner violence is something that we need to be having more conversations about. We need to have more conversations about what consent is, because apparently right. now there's a judge that thinks that if you are completely drunk out of your mind, you can't
yeah.
consent. So I think all levels, judicial branch and, you know, our politicians, our RCMPs, the people who we entrust to make the laws, uphold the laws, and then carry out justice, they themselves are unsure about what things like consent and sexual assault, and they don't have their home, their house in order. And so I think that it's up to us as everyday citizens to take the rein and say, listen, from our homes to our workplaces to our to places in public that we access on a day-to-day basis, consent has to be forefront, and we have to be cognizant of the traumas associated with violence and support women who have experienced it.
And, I mean, we've covered so much ground in just the last few minutes, and I think I want to address that in my last question, which is, you know, you are involved in so many different activities, so many different groups, and there are lots of people just like you. And perhaps in the spirit of the symposium this weekend, which is talking about, you know, getting involved and getting active, you know, when we look at the world and we see how much there is to do, there must be moments where you must feel like it's too much. And how do you deal with though when you come face to face with those moments?
You know, it's a lot of work. And I think that if not all the work that I do is done for free. Mm-hmm. I rarely get paid. I think talks like these and different employment opportunities that come about as a result of the work that I do is, you know, my only means of survivability. And mm-hmm. so it does get tough. And when I say, you know, I'm putting in 70 hours a week and I'm a single parent and it's, you know, 68 of those is unpaid. I look back at my girls and I look back at why I'm doing this and why, what drives me. And what really drives me is the fact that my girls, I must leave this land when, you know, it's my time. Mm-hmm. I must leave it in a better place. You know, when we talk about 1 in 3, I have 2 girls. You know, the odds for them experiencing sexual violence, the odds for them experience domestic violence is high. Mm-hmm. And so it's my prerogative to change the landscape of our country. You know, you say, you know, who do you want to help? It's, I want to help my girls. I want to help you to understand what violence is. I want to, you know, help folks that say, you know, she says no, but maybe if I keep asking, she'll say yes. No, let's not do that.
Yes.
What? She didn't exactly say no. Like, have those conversations that are hardest with the people that we love. And so that we change them, we change the culture, and we just leave Canada, I leave the land in a much more hospitable, a much more humane culture than we first entered it into.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave the conversation there, but you can certainly hear more from Akio this weekend here in Guelph. And Akio, we thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule to pick up the phone and talk to us, and we look forward to seeing you up here this weekend.
No problem. Thank you so much. You guys have a good time.
You too. Thank you. So once again, that was Akio Maroon, who will be part of Crackdowns and Creativity, which is an OPERG-organized symposium. You can find out more information about that at operg.com.
We will confirm that before the end of the show. There's usually a poster up, but...
OPERG.com/events?
We've got operguelph.org, and that'll probably lead you to the right place.
operguelph.org.
So. And there's a book sale and tabling, too, which is probably my favorite tabling that happens in town all year, is that one.
Well, that's an endorsement. That should be on that poster right there.
Yes, so...
My favorite
Hertz
table
says yes
Scotty
to book
Hertz.
Sales. Yes. So.
Well, in our last few minutes, we're just going to deal with, unfortunately, sort of rolling into some of the things Akio was talking about with hate crimes. There's been sort of a despicable rise in hate crimes, anti-Semitic crimes, crimes against Muslims. I pulled this number from the Southern Poverty Law Center. And their group that tracks sort of hate crimes, that's kind of their bread and butter, if you can call tracking hate crimes bread and butter. But
yes,
the number of hate groups in the U.S. has risen for the second year of the row. Anti-Muslim hate groups has gone from 34 to 101, and hate crimes against Muslims has grown 67%. And I think there's probably no better illustration of that, although these weren't Muslims who were attacked, but two young men from India, Alok Madsani and Spinis Kuchabahatla, I hope I didn't butcher their names, but they were shot by a man named Adam Purinton. Great name for
it's race almost like baiting. Puritan, but yeah. With a little spin.
But he's 51 years old. He saw these two
did they
engineers.
Die? Sorry, I don't know where they
one
killed?
Died.
Oh my god!
One was just critically injured. And there was an innocent bystander who was in. I mean, they were all innocent, but there was a man who Puritan wasn't shooting at that was also injured. But he says, "Get out of my country!" before he shoots them in a Kansas City bar and grill.
And the people that look at this and say, oh, look at America. Look at America. It's falling apart. Other night, eating supper, watching The Crawl. And here's what came up. Fire at Mount Dennis Islamic Information Center. Intentionally set arson. There was a Masonic temple up the road also set on fire. They're not sure if it was coincidence or the same arson. But, of course, somebody sees something religious looking. Set that on fire, too. Swastikas in the York University bathroom or classroom on the chalkboard. Mm. I've seen swastikas at the university here. I think we spoke about it a couple few months ago, which I made a point of cleaning up myself.
Local hero, Scotty Hertz.
Oh, thanks, but yeah, I have my zero tolerance or anything like that. Also, what else is it? The bomb threat at Concordia.
That was just last night.
Directed at Muslims.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I guess this was me watching The Crawl last night, but
you were watching the
Hate
Crimes Crawl.
The men in booth at St. Lawrence Market in Toronto were sprayed with what they think was urine. They give out free Korans. They do the same thing here. I'm not actually sure whether what their specific group is, but they're not, you know, doing harm. They're just disseminating information.
Well,
anymore.
Like the Gideons, right?
Yes. And a Ryerson TA fired for making anti-Semitic remarks at a mosque. Mm-hmm. And this was all just in one night. And I'm like, is it on the rise or is it just being reported more? I definitely think it's on the rise. Like, you can't.
Well,
the
Southern Poverty Law Center numbers say it show it's on the rise. Yeah. I mean, that's America.
And that's America. But then, of course, we're seeing
this stuff knows no borders.
It's almost like the gate opened and everybody has been enabled somehow. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, okay, you've been validated. You can do this now. We've got the alt-right on the rise. You can say what you want. The part I hate about it is the free speech argument, which I think is a moot point. But also, it turns out that hate crime, there is no – you cannot be charged with hate crime. You can be charged with – this is true.
There's
nothing on the books. It's hate crime. It's always something slightly like breach of the peace or mischief.
Well, I know the Ryerson guy's been charged with mischief.
Mischief. See, there you go. So what's mischief? I mean
– yeah.
I was almost charged with mischief, and it wasn't from the racist thing, but it's like...
True confession.
We won't get into that, but it's like, sometimes mischief is just a ticket, right? You get the right, you get a ticket, and you go pay the ticket. But, you know, this is far more serious than that. And, of course, Quebec, too, seems to be... And a lot of that, some of that is probably post-shooting, I think, the shooting that we saw. Which is weird because it was, you know, it was a shooting against Muslim people by, as you mentioned earlier, a pure wool Quebecer, I think.
Yeah.
And yet that's like somehow this is driving the hatred against Muslims in Quebec. It's like,
right.
It doesn't make sense. You think it'd be, now that's not to say there's also been this wave of support for the Islamic community in Quebec as well. But, of course, it's always overshadowed by somebody, I don't know, randomly setting an Islamic center on fire. That was Mount Dennis in Toronto, by the way, like up in the, you know. Not,
the sticks.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say not right downtown. I'm trying to be nice. But
they know where they are. But
it's a very difficult thing to prosecute. We call it a hate crime, but on the books, you know, there's nothing that says this is a
hate. There's several different levels to this. People are seeing swastikas everywhere now and are automatically thinking hate crime. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, when for years punks have just drawn swastikas, like watch the freak out of the squares by drawing a sloppily drawn swastika, and it's usually oriented the wrong way. That's how you know. But I,
because they're dumb,
right?
And if you do it here and I find you, I'm coming for you.
Well, let's not issue blanket threats.
No, it's not a threat. I'm just gonna come talk to you. You will have words with me. Guaranteed.
I think a lot of people want to blame Trump, and I think Trump is highly blamable, but I don't think Trump is going out there saying, yes, let's incite racism. But there is a statement being made. He started the joint session speech the other night with, like, there's a lot of hate out. I'm not quoting him verbatim, but he's like, there's a lot of hate out there. You know, we've had mosques being threatened. We've had bombs, you know, bomb threats being called into Jewish community centers. We had these two guys who were shot in Kansas City just for going out for a hamburger or whatever they were doing.
And then he said, so true. No, I don't know.
Anyway, he might have. Yeah. But that was the first time he addressed the shooting of these two guys in Kansas City. The first time, almost a week later, he addressed it for the first time. He's never said one word about Alexandra Bissonnette in Quebec.
No, because that's Canada.
Well, it's Canada, he said a ton of stuff about the attacks in Paris.
Look at what's happening in Sweden.
And Sweden.
Which didn't happen.
Which didn't exist.
Yeah.
This is it. He'll talk about terrorist attacks by Muslims that are made up before he talks about real terrorist attacks by white people against Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily hate speech or coming from a place of hatred or racism, but it is a message.
Yeah, and it allows a window for people to read into it what they want.
Exactly.
Right? They can say, oh, he's saying that. That actually means this. It's all, you know.
But I mean,
like everybody does with their holy books.
I don't think he wants. I don't think he wants these things committed. But on the other hand, he, like, somebody needs to say to him, like, dude, you really got to step this up and condemn this stuff.
And work on the phrasing, like Bush coming out right after 9/11.
Precisely.
We do not hate Muslim people. We have nothing.
Be like Bush.
Yeah, which is incredible. We're sitting here saying that. It's just like, huh?
But yeah,
the great statesman George W.
But
Bush.
When he hems
what?
And haws, or then he's talking to attorneys general, and he says, like, well, you don't know, maybe these Jewish community centers could be calling in bomb threats on themselves.
It was a false flag operation.
False flag.
It's when he's shooting.
That's
from
a
the
horrible
hip.
Message. Yeah. Anyway,
it's fake news.
We have to wrap that.
This is not fake news.
No, we are not fake news.
We're going to change our show name to "This is not the fake news."
This is not fake news, Guelph. But that is all this week for Open Sources Guelph, and you can stay connected to us at our website at opensourcesguelph.com. We are on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, on Twitter at OS_Guelph, and you can listen to this and other previous Open Sources Guelph episodes at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through the iTunes. And you can connect with me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, spanderbook.wordpress.com for the blogging.
And when Scotty's not blogging, he'll be back here next week, and so will I. You can stay tuned now for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we will all be back here next week at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources, and we'll see you then.